Welcome to an enlightening podcast from IslamPodcasts.com. We encourage our listeners to please comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please remind your family and friends to also visit IslamPodcasts.com for engaging discussions on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran, tafsir, seerah, and much more. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and seerah are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com as well as rate, review of iTunes.
He mentions the treatment specifically of Jews at the hands of the Ottomans. And he said that the land became the land of opportunity. Jewish physicians from the schools of Salamanca were employed at the service of the Sultan and the Viziers. In many places, glassmaking, metalworking were Jewish monopolies, and the knowledge of foreign languages, they were the greatest competitors to the Venetian traders. This is what he said, Cecil Roth. So we can see that actually there's a complete difference in terms of the way minorities or people of other religions have been treated under the Islamic government and the rights that Islam affords. The question is that who sets those rights for a Muslim? Why should a Muslim not abuse a non-Muslim, his beliefs, his values, etc.? It's not because we're in authority. It's not because, you know, it's conducive per se, but rather these are guaranteed. We have to. We're obliged to in Islam. That's the restricting factor. In a secular society, the dominant faction will always set the laws. In the current secular society that we live in today, which is a capitalist society, the dominant factor is the capitalist, the industrialist. The manufactured consent, as Noam Chomsky called it. Those any people who hold the reins of the media moguls. And that's why you can't change the system from within. So I think there's a person who said, what should we do today? Let's go out and vote for a socialist worker person. It's not about who you vote. It's about, as Alex said, how to change the system. And how to change the system means to look at the ideas and values and philosophy that underpins that system. Hence, the discussion starts first with debating the ideas and the discussions about what type of society, what type of system that we want. And I'm here trying to propose an Islamic system, primarily in the Muslim world, but inshallah one day also here.
I'm just scanning the room for people who haven't had an opportunity yet to ask a question. If there are any questions from the lady section, you're more than welcome to put your hand up and ask. If not, you can submit a written question. Okay, there's a number of hands up at the back who haven't had an opportunity to ask yet. Where's the mic? You can just send it back there. Middle row first, and then the gentleman at the back.
Health service representing 2,000 people. I think this debate shows that freedom of speech is important, that people should debate to understand each other's ideas and learn. And the question is to Sharif, particularly. These insults to Islam, are they not part of a plan to incite and distract white people from the problems they face in society? The society is a society of misery, of unemployment, of poor education, of denied opportunities. They use these insults try and trick white people, blaming and scapegoating other people. So the insults are not insults pure and simple, they're insults with a deeper motive to distract attention from the corrupt society that we live in. Alex, can I start with that?
As I said in my presentation, in the last 11 years, what we've seen is governments trying to demonize Islam and the Muslims, insulting Islam and the Muslims to justify a colonial, capitalist foreign policy in order to invade Muslims, in order to seek their resources within these lands. We know this, and that's the problem. That's the context of the anger that's facing the Muslims. So, you know, what we try to do, explain to wider society, is to understand that, hold on, problem of terrorism or the backlash or the reaction isn't just simply because of, you know, something regards to the Muslims. It's not because of what's in the Muslims or what's in Islam. It's rather when Muslims see drone attacks, or when people live under drone attacks in Pakistan, or when they see invasions and occupations in Iraq and Afghanistan, then naturally there's going to be a reaction and an anger against this. And obviously what happens, as you rightly pointed out, is that there's a constant way of obfuscation, trying to confuse the masses to say, no, it's got nothing to do with what we're doing. We're rather bringing them what they want. Rather, it's what these minority believe in, these so-called Islamic extremists, that there's something wrong with them. That's why we have to invade Afghanistan. That's why we have to bomb targets in Pakistan. That's why we have to go and give billions of dollars to the Egyptian army as they currently do today. That's why we have to give billions of dollars again to the Pakistan army as well, in order to justify this pretext, because it's not real. The real reason why they're doing this is that they're trying to invade our lands in order to rob our resources and establish their hegemony upon the Muslim world.
Gentlemen at the back.
No, I just want to ask a question. Practically, can you give an example of whether there's an example in history when it was practically applied to create a harmonious and cohesive society? That's a question to both of you. And to Sharif, what I would ask him is, what's the difference? Is Islam is a religion like other religions? Because you know, if it's just religion, it's a personal thing, and how can we apply that in society? So, just two questions.
Alex, do you want to answer first?
Yeah, I think the question related to when in history has socialism created a cohesive and unified society? Well, in the immediate aftermath of the Russian Revolution, the Bolsheviks, they were going towards that, but it was interrupted and almost destroyed by the Western powers invading and isolating the revolution. And the key thing about socialism is it is a truly international thing. We believe that socialism is the answer for everyone all over the world, and it has to spread all over the world in order to work. And because the revolution in Russia was isolated, and because Russia was a backward nation, the bureaucratic clique under Stalin was able to seize control of it and pervert it. So we haven't had a long-lasting example of a socialist society actually creating the society we want to see yet. That doesn't mean we don't strive for it and we don't fight for it.
So to answer your question as well, in terms of is Islam like a religion like other religions? No, Islam's, as Muslims we always say, it's a way of life. And what that means for us is that it not only organises the relationships amongst individuals, how we pray, how we fast, how we interact with our neighbours and our families, but also Islam has regulations in terms of economy. So we don't believe in a fiat-backed currency, a currency which is paper money, not worth anything except the paper, not even the paper that's written on. Yeah, we have a bimetallic currency. Well, Islam also defines to us what the type of resources that can be owned and can't be owned. So we believe natural monopolies like oil, gas, coal, they cannot be owned by individuals, but rather the people take profit over the shares, over the profit that is accrued from refining and distributing that wealth. So we have a very detailed economic, political, social system, which is very different to other religions. The problem that we have today is that, similarly to Alex, we don't have any representation today of an Islamic system. But the difference between me and Alex is that we did have for 1,000 years an Islamic system that was applied based upon the principles of Islam. And it was a society that led the world not only in terms of rights for individuals, rights for women, rights for minorities, but also led the world scientifically, technologically, in terms of medicine, all of these benchmarks that we look at in terms of assessing the quality of life of society. This was the type of society that we had and we developed based upon the principles of Islam. And it was that society that capitalist West felt threatened by and hence sought to try and dismantle it in order to invade the lands as they did in some parts of the Muslim world, and also install dictators and puppets as we see today in order to prevent the rise of any Islamic renaissance or any Islamic revival.
Okay, the gentleman in the middle.
I apologise if anybody's already asked this question, but it's looking forward. Muslims and socialists and Marxists have actually shared platforms, especially in relation to sort of anti-war activities in relation to Iraq and Afghanistan. What is the future of that cooperation, bearing in mind what Sharifa said, that rather than actually engaging in a coalition of actions, we should try and actually look at the ideas underpinning the systems before we actually engage in any action. So, particularly Sharifa, I throw this open to both speakers. What future do you see in Muslim, Marxist or leftist cooperation on issues such as the war, for example, or poverty, or the fact that capitalism is actually basically croaking it at the moment?
I mean, in terms of engagement and agreement on some common injustices, that's where Muslims and socialists, I think, we come together in terms of our agreement about the problem and our stand against capitalist systems which basically give wealth amongst a small tiny minority and doesn't allow it to seep down to the rest of society, or creates wealth within the West but at the same time builds that wealth based upon the monopolization of the resources in the Muslim world or in the third world, generally its exploitation. I mean, maybe afterwards though, we need to take the discussion further than about agreeing upon the problem. We also need to look at what type of solutions do we offer. So as I mentioned, Islam has its own economic and political system. An economy in which states that you don't have American, British oil companies coming in and refining the oil on behalf of the Saudi government that owns the oil. You don't have that in an Islamic system. Rather, what you have in an Islamic system is that that's public resource. If the state refines and makes money, it goes to the state treasury, which is then rebuilt or redistributed into hospitals, into schools, into roads, into infrastructure. You know, and an example of this, Pakistan has a debt, external debt, of about $40 billion. A debt that accrued from the IMF, a capitalist institution. We can agree that it's incorrect, unjust, and oppressive. But Islam says that certain resources like the copper gold mine, which is in Baluchistan, known as Rekodik, which has over $120 billion worth, that is a public resource that not only would pay the debt, but also will be then used to provide infrastructural redevelopment in terms of schools, education, hospitals, health service, etc. So we can see that we have solutions as well as to these problems, but obviously we agree upon the problems as well.
Yeah, just to answer that point briefly, when we approach anything such as anti-war work or anything like that, socialists will always seek to take action with those who agree with us on these points on the basis of a democratically debated and agreed program. We will always have our ideas, others will always have theirs. But where it is possible to work together in a common cause, we always should. Now, on the question of socialist policies, I mean, there's much in what Sharif just said that I don't disagree with. I mean, where I'll take it further is that under socialism, we believe that all natural resources and all wealth should be under the democratic control of the people, democratic control of the working class and the poor in every society. And that it is democratically controlled, and it's a genuine what we call workers' democracy, and not a bureaucratic distortion as we saw in the Soviet Union. That you would actually get an economy that is genuinely based around human need, rather than the needs and desires of bureaucrats or the needs of capitalists.
Okay, I'm going to take two written questions that have been submitted to both the panelists before I go on to take further questions from the floor. The first question for Alex, considering he's agreed with a lot of the policies that Sharif's put forward, the question that's come forward is, does the Socialist Party agree with the right for the Muslims to have a caliphate and Islamic State anywhere in the world?
Well, to answer that directly, we believe in the right of self-determination of all nations all over the world. I also believe in the fact that I believe that socialism is the future for all of humanity all over the world. But that decision and the revolution that will be needed to actually create that social society will be the action of each individual nation, of each individual working class and poor all over the world. It will not be for the UK or anybody else to try and impose this on anybody. We believe that people will go to war.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. Podcasts on current events, Islamic guidance, Quran tafsir, and Sira are available at islampodcasts.com as well as on iTunes. Rate, review, and comment and let us know how we can grow in our knowledge to better serve our community. Please subscribe, share, and tell a friend about islampodcasts.com.